perhaps unusual for a millennial, I met my beloved wife, like generations of folks before me have met their beloveds, in person, at a bar. Ours was a classic Brooklyn lesbian bar, kind of like Cheers, but filled with self-avowed dykes and femmes and queers and butches and trans folks and genderqueer folks and everyone between and beyond all of those labels. The regulars played pool in the back room, stone cold serious with their cigarettes hanging out the sides of the corners of their mouths, an attitude like the smoke they puffed filling the room by 4 p.m. This was before the no smoking rules in bars. The bathroom walls were scrawled with testimonies of love and phone numbers and community notices. Up front worked the bartenders, tending not only the drinks, but also the souls of their community as they listened and laughed and lingered in the safe semi-darkness. For decades and decades and decades, LGBTQ bars are where we have found our loves, created chosen family when our families of origin wouldn't have us, made sanctuary when churches condemned us, and celebrated our resilience in the face of hate. These places are, to many of us, more like your grandmother's house, your church, your community center, than a bar. Despite appearances to the world, they are sacred, and they were sacred spaces. The Stonewall Inn, now famous in New York City, was no different. It was, if anything, more sacred, more close to the heartbeat of its community, more clearly offering the communion of wine and listening than we could possibly understand some 50 years later. This was a time when one could be arrested if they weren't wearing at least 3 items of clothing traditionally associated with their gender. Like if I wasn't wearing a dress or a skirt, etc. This was a time when any public congregating of queer folks could mean arrest. And it was a time when any suspicion of queerness could get one fired from their job. Just after midnight, on the 28th of June, 1969, the Stonewall Inn was filled with its regular congregation of queers. There, despite the threat of frequent police raids. We used to just sit around, trying to figure out when this harassment would come to an end. And we would always dream that one day it would come to an end. We prayed and we looked for it. We wanted to be human beings, said Sylvia Rivera, a Stonewall regular. Sylvia had lived on the streets of New York City since she was 11 years old and had been kicked out of her home for being a boy who liked to wear dresses. For many years, she had tried to help her fellow queers be seen as human beings. What is now known as the Stonewall Uprising didn't come out of a vacuum, just like Rosa Parks sitting down on the bus that day didn't happen on a whim. Both were part of a long history of resistance. And yet, something was different that night at Stonewall. The air was thick with grief. One of the only public figures to express any support for Sylvia's fellow queers, Judy Garland, had died, and her funeral was during the day that day. They had traveled over from the funeral home, and they nursed their grief together inside the Stonewall. The public moral squad of the police department, yes, that was their official name, gathered outside. But when they barged in and began arrests,
the congregation of queers didn't just leave like usual. Sylvia remembers, people started gathering in front of Sheridan Square right across the street from Stonewall. People were upset. No, we're not going to go. And people started screaming and hollering. Another self-proclaimed queen, the word transgender didn't exist yet, Miss Martin recalls this. When we saw the riot police, all of us drag queens, we linked arms like the Rockettes. And we sang this song. We are the village girls. We wear our hair in curls. We wear our dungarees above our Nelly knees. The police went crazy hearing that, and they immediately rushed on us. Miss Major, another person present that night, remembers it this way. The memory of that first night doesn't come to me with a sense of joy or happiness, because so many of the girls and a few of the guys got really hurt. After the city police barged into the bar with numbers and attitude, the prevalent feeling that night was fear. Looking at the riot squad was like watching Star Wars stormtroopers, but they were in black with riot gear, sticks, guns, mace, helmets, and shields. The brutalization as they moved across and down the street was like a tidal wave hitting a coastline city. It just hit and rolled over you. If you fought, you'd wind up down. And if you were down, they would keep on beating you. And yet, the deputy inspector police officer that night, who led the raid and continued to fight back against the raid for 3 nights that the Stonewall Uprising lasted, remembers this. He said this in 1989. After the Stonewall incident, things were completely changed from what they had previously been. They suddenly were not submissive anymore. They now suddenly had gained a new type of courage. It seemed as if they didn't care anymore about whether their identities were made known. We were now dealing with human beings. We were now dealing with human beings. That's the line that haunts me. It haunts me because it's so familiar 50 years later. There are so many of our beloveds in our world and in our community who so many people don't seem to see as human. And it also haunts me because it's an echo of the scripture that we read today that's been used as a weapon. Then God said, "Let us make humankind in our image according to our likeness." So, God created humankind in God's image. In the image of God, God created them. Male and female, God created them. How many times have you heard this scripture used to defend the idea that marriage should only be between a man or a woman, and a woman? How many times have you heard it used to say there are only men and women? I personally have become a bit numb to those scriptural tropes of abuse. I'm numb in my own emotional self-defense. As many queer theologies and biblical reinterpretations as I've studied, as many Christian blessings as I've received and as I've given, as many stickers as I've handed out at Pride that remind me and other people that they are made fabulously in God's image, I still personally have those scriptural scars around those lines. Because they're still being used. They're still being used actively every day to harm and exclude. Miss Major, who was present during those riots and continues to advocate to this day, said in a recent interview, "The sad thing is that it's 50 years later and things haven't changed enough for my girls. For my trans guys, gender non-conforming people, and for me to feel safe. There's a pain that comes along with the courage to still go out every day and be present, to resist hiding. A lot of girls stepped out of the closet, and in the process, we burned the house down so there'd be no closet. But because they can't put us back in a closet, they beat us up, they kill us, they take away our sense of freedom. As people of biblical heritage, we know we're called to disrupt this kind of obvious violence towards all people, towards trans people, towards genderqueer people. But we are also called to disrupt the way this scripture lives in all of us, in all of our beings and minds, limiting us without our consent. We're called to expand our biblical imaginations so that we can find more freedom in God's image and in ourselves too, no matter our gender identity. United Methodist Deacon M. Barclay reframes this chapter of Genesis with gorgeous simplicity and generosity. They say, "This chapter of Genesis talks about night and day, land and water, but we have dusk and marshes too. These verses don't mean there's only land and water, and there's nowhere where these two meet. These binaries aren't meant to speak to all of reality. They invite us into thinking about everything between and beyond." I love that. We don't just have day and night, land and water. We have dusk and marshes. It's important to remember this piece of scripture is poetry. It's not a taxonomy textbook. How could Genesis be an invitation from God to you to think about and live into everything between and beyond the binaries in your life? It may not be that you need that invitation to understand and claim how your gender identity exists in the world, but all of us who live in this culture of Christianity have been limited in some way by binaries, by false choices of one thing or another that we've absorbed. I asked some of you on Facebook, what binaries, what false choices are limiting your life? And you had a lot of wisdom to share. So listen to these binaries and see if any of them haunt you or limit you or haunt and limit the people in your life that you love. And see if you might find some freedom in embracing an invitation to both, or neither, or neither, or beyond, or all, or some other third way. Here is a list. Male or female. Feeling or thinking. Mind or body. Worthy or unworthy. LGBTQ or Christian. Brave or scared. Immigrant or citizen. Science or religion. Working or stay-at-home parent. Abled or disabled. Religious or atheist. Urban or rural. Teacher or student. Us or them. innocent or guilty, action or contemplation, closeted or out, rich or poor, hopeful or practical. We all need to remember that dusk and marshes exist. And they serve the purpose not only of beauty, but of making life possible. What dusk or dawn is forming in your life? What in between or beyond or neither or neither or third way do you need God to bless? Do you need to say yes to in your life? The Stonewall riots didn't just happen 50 years ago and help shift the tide of history towards a future of liberation. Or at least, they don't have to just be a story we tell from the past. The Stonewall riots can be an example of what can happen every day, every moment, when we are willing to step out of the false choices we've inherited together. The Stonewall riots are an invitation to imagine beyond what we have been taught is possible in our lives. The Stonewall riots are a call to step into our power, like Sylvia and Miss Martin and Miss Major and all the Stonewall saints. They weren't saints in the sense of being perfect. They were saints in the sense that they knew God had made them perfectly. And that made them powerful enough to change the world. May we too know our own fabulousness in God's image. May we too demand that the world recognizes each and every one of us in our own fabulousness. The song we're about to sing is by Holly Meir, and it is, in some ways, the language is outdated, but we're singing it because this is the